Think about the last time you bought like a bottle of multivitamin.
Right, you take it home with a pretty basic expectation of consistency.
Exactly. The label says 100 milligrams of calcium, and you just trust that every single time you take one, you're getting exactly that amount. I mean, it's a closed, predictable system.
Yeah, the chemistry inside that plastic bottle doesn't suddenly alter just because the weather outside is changing. A vitamin pill is, you know, static.
But what if that bottle of vitamins was intrinsically tied to the state of the ocean? Imagine if, over the course of the next decade, the pills inside just started invisibly losing their iron, their calcium, and their omega-3s.
And all without the label on the outside ever changing.
Exactly. So today we're taking a deep dive into a fascinating paper from Nature Climate Change that reveals this massive, almost imperceptible shift happening in our global food system.
We are dissecting a study published in late 2023 by Chung and a team of researchers. It's titled "Climate Change Exacerbates Nutrient Disparities from Seafood." And, well, the goal here is to really shift the lens.
Yeah, because when you hear about ocean conservation, the narrative usually just stops at rising sea levels or like the raw tonnage of fish populations, right?
Right. But we are going to look closer today. We're tracking the actual micronutrients, the microscopic building blocks of human health that actually make it onto our plates.
Our mission today is to show you, the listener, how the shifting chemistry and temperature of the ocean is fundamentally rewiring who gets to be healthy.
And why this invisible nutrient drain is really setting the stage for a staggering global equity issue.
So, to start, the historical context these researchers provide is just a perfect starting point because it challenges a very common assumption about overfishing.
It really does. It flips the script.
I noticed that immediately because, you know, if you casually follow environmental news, you probably assume that since we're overfishing the oceans, humanity must be extracting fewer nutrients from the sea than we used to.
Sure, that makes intuitive sense.
But the data shows the exact opposite trend over the last 20 years. Global marine fisheries production actually peaked back in the 1990s.
Yeah, and today, about 34% of the world's fish stocks are classified as overexploited.
Which means they're being caught faster than they can reproduce.
Exactly. And yet, despite that shrinking global catch, the absolute availability of iron, calcium, and omega-3 fatty acids for direct human consumption has actually increased since that 1990s peak.
Which is wild. To understand how that is even mathematically possible, you really have to look at the historical supply chain,
Right?
specifically, this massive industry known as reduction fisheries.
Yeah, the ultimate inefficient middleman.
Right.
Historically, a huge portion of the fish pulled from the ocean never went to a human dinner plate at all. We caught millions of tons of perfectly edible, highly nutritious small fish, dried them out, and ground them up into fish meal and fish oil.
And then we just fed that processed meal to terrestrial livestock like pigs and
Or
chickens.
to carnivorous farm fish like salmon.
I mean, from a biological standpoint, that just seems like a massive waste of energy. You are filtering perfectly good ocean nutrients through another animal just to get a different kind of meat.
It totally violates the basic rules of energy transfer in an ecosystem.
Yeah.
I mean, every time you move up a trophic level, say, from a wild anchovy to a farmed salmon, you lose roughly 90% of the original energy.
Wow, 90%.
Yeah, and you lose a significant portion of the raw micronutrients, too. But the thing is, since the 2000s, production from those reduction fisheries has decreased.
So we started cutting out that middleman.
Exactly. A much larger proportion of the fish we catch is now routed straight to direct human consumption. So the total pie of fish in the ocean got smaller, but the slice of the pie that humans eat directly got wider.
Okay, so we optimized the supply chain. We basically squeezed more usable vitamins out of a shrinking harvest. Problem solved, right?
Well, not quite. The source material highlights a pretty harsh reality about this trend. While the minerals and omega-3s went up, the actual protein availability from direct human consumption flatlined between the 1990s and the 2010s.
It just hit a plateau.
Right. That plateau is the biological limit of the ocean waving a huge red flag. We became highly efficient at redirecting the catch, but you know, you can only optimize a finite system so much.
We basically played our best card by reducing our reliance on fish meal.
We did. And now we are facing the physical realities of the 21st century. The researchers integrated these complex climate models, fisheries data, and mariculture projections to see what happens next.
Okay, let's talk about those climate models because this is where the era of squeezing more out of less comes to a really abrupt end.
It really does.
The researchers compared different pathways for our future. One is a strong mitigation scenario where humanity drastically cuts greenhouse gas emissions.
And the other is a no mitigation scenario. So basically a fossil fuel driven world where emissions just keep climbing.
And the divergence between those two paths by the end of the century is what drives the core findings of this deep dive today.
The numbers are pretty staggering.
Yeah, under the high emission scenario, by the year 2100, the availability of calcium from fisheries drops by 41%.
Which is massive.
And iron drops by 37%. Meanwhile, omega-3 fatty acids drop by about 22 to 31%, and protein drops 18 to 25%.
So those numbers reveal a really disproportionate loss. The essential minerals, the calcium and the iron, are vanishing from the supply at a significantly faster rate than the fats and the proteins.
I really want to dig into the mechanism there, actually. Why does climate change steal the minerals faster than the protein? I mean, a fish is a fish, isn't it?
Well, not exactly. Not all fish deliver nutrients the same way. The rapid drop in minerals is directly tied to a specific group of marine life called pelagic fishes.
Okay, pelagic fishes.
Yeah, these are small to medium-sized species that live in the open water column. So we're talking anchoveta, sardines, herring, mackerels.
Oh, right, so the little oily fish.
Exactly, and the key to their nutritional value really lies in human culinary habits.
How so?
Well, when you eat a large predatory fish, like a tuna or a cod, you are generally just eating the muscle fillet, right? You leave the skeleton behind.
Right, obviously.
But when people eat sardines or anchovies, they typically consume them whole. You are eating the skin, the organs, and crucially, the bones.
Ah, okay. That makes perfect sense. The calcium is literally in the bones we're eating.
Exactly. That makes pelagic fish absolute powerhouses for calcium and iron. And back in the 2000s, these pelagic fishes accounted for almost one-third of total global catches.
But under the high emissions scenario, their maximum catch potential is projected to plummet by 46 to 60% by the end of the century.
Which is a catastrophic drop.
But why are they so much more vulnerable to climate change than other marine life?
It basically has to do with the physics of warming water. Warmer water naturally holds less dissolved oxygen.
Okay.
At the same time, fish are cold-blooded. So as the water temperature rises, their metabolism speeds up, which means they actually require more oxygen just to survive.
Oh, wow. So you have a situation where the environment provides less oxygen exactly when the fish's body demands more of it.
Precisely. And pelagic fish are highly active, schooling species with high oxygen demands to begin with.
So they essentially suffocate.
Either they suffocate or they are forced to migrate away from their historical habitats to cooler waters. And when they disappear, the ocean's primary mineral delivery system goes with them.
Now, I was looking at the data tables in the source, and I kind of want to push back on this impending mineral deficit for a second.
Go for it.
Because the paper explicitly points out that marine invertebrates, so things like shellfish, oysters, clams, crabs, they're also incredibly dense in minerals.
They are, yes.
And unlike the pelagic fish, their catch potential is projected to only drop by about 2% by 2100 under that same high emissions scenario.
Right. They're much more resilient.
So if we're losing the sardines, why can't we just adapt our diets, like swap out the anchovies for oysters to make up the difference?
I mean, on paper, that sounds like a totally logical substitution. But in biological reality, you run into the problem of edible portions.
What do you mean?
Well, when you pull a sardine out of the water, a very large percentage of that fish's wet weight is edible flesh. For finfish, it's typically between 33 and 92% of the whole animal.
Right, so you're getting a lot of meat for the effort.
Exactly. But when you pull an oyster or a crab out of the water, you are mostly weighing armor.
Oh.
Yeah, for mollusks and crustaceans, the edible wet weight is only 28 to 56%. The rest is just heavy, inedible shell.
That's a huge difference.
It is. Furthermore, invertebrates represent a much smaller proportion of total global catches to begin with. So even though they are relatively resilient to climate change, there simply isn't enough actual edible meat in the entire global invertebrate supply to mathematically compensate for the massive millions of tons decline in pelagic finfish.
Wow, so the math just doesn't scale?
Not even close.
We literally cannot oyster our way out of a global calcium deficit.
Unfortunately not.
So if the wild catch is capped by biology, and shellfish are mostly shell, I guess the natural instinct is to turn to human engineering, right? We farm it.
Yeah. Mariculture or marine farming is frequently presented as this silver bullet for global food security.
And the source material actually does offer some optimistic short-term projections for farming. It projects that by 2050, mariculture will actually produce 11 to 23% more calcium and 18 to 45% more protein relative to the year 2000.
Which sounds great at first glance.
Right. It sounds like a massive victory. So is aquaculture the silver bullet here? Can we just build enough offshore farms to breed our way out of this?
No. You have to look at those percentages in the context of the total global food supply. Mariculture currently provides only about 15% of total global seafood production.
Just 15%.
Yep. And more importantly, it provides only 10 to 25% of these four key nutrients we're tracking.
Oh, I see.
So a 45% increase in a very small slice of the pie is completely dwarfed by a 40% loss in the massive wild capture slice.
It's basically the equivalent of getting a 50% raise at a weekend part-time job while simultaneously getting fired from your full-time career. I mean, your net income is still going to crash.
That is a brutally accurate analogy. And there's a deeper structural flaw in relying on mariculture, too. And it brings us right back to the inefficiency of the food chain we discussed earlier.
The middleman thing.
Exactly. The aqua feed loop.
Ah, the diet of the farmed fish.
Right. So about 70% of current mariculture is bivalves, you know, mussels, clams, oysters. They are filter feeders.
Meaning they just pull phytoplankton directly from the water.
Yes, which means they require zero feed inputs from humans. That is the sustainable side of the industry.
Okay, but what's the other side?
The destructive side is the farming of finfish and crustaceans, which actually grew 50 times over between 1990 and 2010.
And that's driven almost entirely by demand in high-income countries for premium species, right? Like salmon and shrimp.
Exactly. And those premium species are omnivorous or entirely carnivorous. They cannot filter feed. They require manufactured aqua feed.
And let me guess what the primary ingredients in high-quality aqua feed are.
Fish meal and fish oil, which are processed from wild-caught pelagic fish.
The exact same wild-caught fish that are suffocating and migrating away due to ocean warming.
You nailed it.
So to farm the premium fish we want to eat, we are forced to pull more of the shrinking wild fish out of the ocean. That just creates a massive drain on the exact micronutrients we are trying to preserve for direct human consumption.
It creates a huge biological deficit. The paper notes that in 2007 and 2008 alone, the aquaculture industry consumed almost 4 million tons of fish meal.
4 million tons?
Yeah, that was nearly 70% of total global production. They also consume nearly 800,000 tons of fish oil.
That's insane.
So the idea that farming carnivorous fish magically generates new nutrients out of thin air is a total myth. You are simply moving wild nutrients into a confined pen and losing a massive percentage of those nutrients in the digestive process of the farmed fish.
And when the researchers run their models all the way out to 2100 under the high emission scenario, even the mariculture sector breaks down. The paper concludes that by the end of the century, humanity will see a net loss of 20 to 30% of marine nutrients relative to the 2000s. And that's even when you combine all wild catch and all farming efforts.
Because farms are not immune to the ocean they sit in. Eventually, the warming waters increase the risks of infectious diseases in these crowded pens.
Right.
And it triggers harmful algal blooms that can literally wipe out an entire farm's inventory overnight.
Hey, okay, so up until now, we've really only been discussing global averages. And a 30% drop globally is a severe problem, obviously. But climate change isn't a uniform blanket that covers the Earth evenly, is it?
No, not at all. It acts much more like a geographical lottery.
This is the pivot point in the paper where an ecological warning really becomes a glaring human rights issue.
It truly is.
The researchers mapped out these nutrient declines geographically. They divided the ocean into exclusive economic zones or EASs. These are basically the coastal waters over which individual nations have jurisdiction.
Right.
And if you live in an extratropical zone, meaning outside the tropics, which is generally the wealthier nations in the northern hemisphere, the models show you might actually see small gains in nutrient availability throughout the 21st century.
Yeah, because the fish are actively seeking their optimal thermal niches. As the equatorial waters become too hot and, like we talked about, oxygen depleted, marine life naturally migrates toward the poles to survive.
So the fish are literally moving into the waters of northern nations.
Exactly.
But if your country sits in a tropical EEZ, so that band of ocean between 23.5 degrees north and south of the equator, the data is just catastrophic.
It's devastating.
Under the high emissions scenario, tropical regions are facing a 51 to 61% drop in available nutrients from fisheries by 2100. more than half of their marine nutrition will simply vanish.
To visualize the severity of this shift, imagine the ocean as a giant global grocery store.
Okay, I like this.
As the temperature of the store rises, all the food on the middle shelves of the store begins slowly sliding to the very top and very bottom shelves.
So the food is moving right out of the hands of the people standing in the middle aisles who actually need it.
Yes. And the tragic irony requires us to look at the socioeconomic status of the people standing in those middle aisles.
Who are they?
Well, the countries losing their marine resources are places like Sierra Leone, Nigeria, Indonesia, Cameroon, and the Solomon Islands.
So these are nations that do not treat seafood as a luxury protein.
Far from it. They are highly dependent on local fisheries for basic, irreplaceable dietary micronutrients. We are talking about losing the primary, and sometimes only, source of affordable iron and calcium necessary for childhood physical and cognitive development.
And the paper layers on a demographic reality that makes the situation even more dire, right?
Yeah, unfortunately.
The heavily impacted coastal populations in these tropical nations are not shrinking. They are actually projected to increase by over 50% by the year 2050.
It creates this awful demographic double whammy. The total available nutrients plummet by half, while the population requiring those nutrients grows by half.
So when you divide a rapidly shrinking pie among a rapidly growing number of people, the nutrient availability per capita basically falls off a cliff.
Exactly. And the researchers actually quantified this relationship. They calculated exactly how much nutrition we lose for every degree the Earth warms.
Okay, what's the baseline?
Globally, for every 1 degree Celsius of atmospheric warming above pre-industrial levels, the planet sees a 3.1 to 6.5% drop in available marine nutrients.
But that global average hides the localized devastation, doesn't it?
It really does. Because for lower-income nations, primarily clustered in the tropics, that drop is 9.7 to 11.6% per degree of warming.
Wow. So they're suffering 2 to 3 times the global average rate of loss.
Every single fraction of a degree of warming disproportionately strips calcium and iron from the plates of the world's most vulnerable populations.
This specific scaling metric really illustrates why international climate goals, you know, like the 1.5 degree target of the Paris Agreement versus a 3 or 4 degree trajectory, why they're not just abstract environmental concepts.
They're matters of human survival.
Right. At higher levels of warming, lower income countries lose a third of their nutritional base. If warming can be constrained, that decrease is drastically mitigated. The relationship between carbon emissions and human malnutrition is just direct and linear.
Exactly.
Well, we have covered a massive amount of ground for you, the listener, today. We have moved past the idea of viewing a fish merely as a generic fillet of protein, recognizing it instead as a vital, highly specialized micronutrient delivery system.
Right.
And we've seen how humanity successfully optimized the supply chain over the last few decades, taking fish that used to be ground into animal feed and putting it directly onto human plates. But we've also seen the hard mathematical limits of that optimization.
Yeah, moving forward, the climate-driven migration of pelagic fish threatens to fundamentally alter global health. For anyone trying to understand the full scope of climate change, this paper just demands a new, nutrient-sensitive approach to global food management.
It's not just about counting fish anymore.
No, it underscores the urgent need to break the aquafeed loop. Finding scalable alternative feeds for aquaculture feeds that don't rely on wild-caught fish is no longer just an environmental goal. It is an absolute nutritional necessity if mariculture is going to be part of the solution.
The study's discussion on trade disparities leaves us with a final, really provocative mechanism to consider.
Oh, this part is fascinating.
As the oceans warm and fish migrate toward the poles, rich, higher-income countries in northern latitudes are projected to retain their fish stocks and maybe even experience gains.
Right. They get the climate refugees, essentially, in the form of fish.
Yes. While simultaneously, the overall global supply of marine nutrients is shrinking. And in a globalized free market, when a vital, life-sustaining resource becomes scarce, the price inevitably skyrockets.
And we know who can afford that.
Right. Those wealthier northern nations possess massive purchasing power. Even if a tropical nation manages to catch a fraction of its remaining fish, the economic pressure to export that catch to wealthy nations will be immense.
The local fishers will be incentivized to sell their catch to international buyers rather than feeding their own communities.
Exactly. So wealthy countries could effectively use the global market to just buy the last of the ocean's calcium and iron right out from under the lower income countries that desperately need those nutrients for their own survival.
Climate change doesn't just physically redistribute the fish, it supercharges the economic inequality of who gets to buy what is left.
It is a staggering dynamic to consider the next time you pick up a bottle of vitamins or look at a piece of seafood on your plate. The label might look exactly the same, but the invisible reality inside is shifting beneath our feet.